Hey, you're listening to Soul Games, the podcast,
where we explore new ways to enjoy the game of life with a touch more soul.
And a lot of fun.
So let's play.
Shall we? Yes, welcome to the show. We have a really special guest, one of our good friends, Michael Gunger, today. And my co-host, Emily Capshaw. Welcome, y'all.
Hey, hey.
Hello. I didn't know you had play in your intro. That's fun.
Oh, it's perfect. I didn't realize until just now. I was like, oh, yeah, let's play.
I mean, this the show is called Soul Games. So when we were chatting with Michael about what we want to do this episode about, and usually Emily and I come up with the title and we're like, hey, let's do this thing. And we kind of pitch the thing to the person that we feel like fits. But we asked Michael because he's kind of like our, like the daddy of podcasting in our world. So,
podcast like, daddy.
Hey. Podcast daddy. What does podcast daddy want to talk about? And you wrote back this really beautiful idea. Well, you actually just wrote back play. And Em and I were like, wait, what is he talking about? Because that could go a lot of directions. Yeah, but
it's true.
We said, like, I was kind of like, say more, tell me more, more words. Can you use your words?
I think Brady was like, is he talking about words, play daddy? Parties?
Actually, it was. I was like, was he talking about sex? Or like, was
sex can be play.
It totally can be play. But mm-hmm. I was like a little side text to Em. I was like, hey, help me understand because he's like your best friend. So what's he saying here? And she was like, I think he's just talking about play. And so then you like, we asked you and you were basically like, well, the sacredness of play, like the centrality and what did you say? The centrality and something, consistency or...
I couldn't possibly tell you.
That was
actually, you said play. The sacredness and centrality of play for a rich and spiritual life. That's okay, actually what you said.
Yeah, that sounds nice.
So what was it about that topic that had you like kind of lit something up inside of you?
Well, I've thought a lot about play and I've thought about a lot about spirituality and kind of how they're related and why spirituality, you know, when I go to a church or a temple, really kind of any religion that I've been to, I just was in India for a while. If you go to Hindu temples, Buddhist temples, I've been to a lot of churches around a lot of different kinds of denominations. It's almost always pretty somber. Maybe not exclusively. I mean, like charismatic Christians sometimes really get going. But a lot of times it's just kind of like, ooh, and it's very serious. But then you see like spiritual people who I would consider like spiritual masters, are usually very playful and lighthearted and laugh very easily. And there's traditions like Zen that has at their center, they have kind of an austere exterior, like meditate, I'm going to hit you with the stick if you don't. But it's kind of part of a joke because like the core of it are these like koans and stuff where you're like, do you get it yet? What's the sound of one hand clapping? They're like, ooh, all right, meditate longer. Pow, hit you a stick. But it's kind of a joke. The whole thing is a joke.
Really?
I mean, kind of. It's just, it's where you get to the point where it releases. It's funny. Like, koans are funny when you understand them. So I'm interested in the relationship as someone who's grown up in so many spiritual communities and around that world. Is it possible for it to be more fun? Is it possible to allow play to be spiritual as well? And maybe even is play sort of in a way the pinnacle of what spirituality could be.
See, this is why he's daddy podcast, because like he basically set up the entire podcast. We don't even have to do it.
There you go. And also exactly why he's my BFF, because I mean, I've said so many times on other episodes like about how I've abandoned the like reductionist and abstaining type of spirituality for just a really hedonistic pleasure seeking spirituality at this point, where I'm just like, yeah, what's gonna help me like have more pleasure? That's what I want to do. So yeah, that's why I feel like we bond over this for sure. We see that the same.
Well, I love it. I love the concept. And for you guys that don't know Michael, Michael actually, I think he's a, you go by
whatever
he,
you like.
He jumped on the podcast a couple years ago when it was called The Unravel. And we had an interesting conversation around how letting go of belief changed everything. And I've gotten to know Michael a bit more over the years and always have had the best, like the best chats, best conversations, like from like, complete like the depth, the going into the deep or whatever the thing is, to like complete hilarity in the next sentence. Like I remember, you remember when we were at your house and you were there, we were in the kitchen, it was like I don't know, sometime in the last year, and I was actually having like a pretty intense attachment wound kind of thing show up in my body, and you were like leading me, guiding me through this like thing that was trying to get down to like the like infinitesimal moment of like time where like no suffering exists, and like there was like you were just like fully present, and like you were like helping me drop and drop. Do you remember this moment?
I do remember, actually. Yeah.
I mean, it was probably 2 a.m. like exhausted.
Yeah.
And I think at the end, like you kind of led me in, and I was like understanding and dropping down, and I think at the end maybe you asked something, a question, and I was, or maybe I just said, I understand like what you're doing and what the teaching is, but I go, I just think it's bullshit.
Yeah, I remember that too. I remember that comment. I remember that comment. And I remember at one point, Brady, you asking Michael, like, what would you tell me right now to like help me not suffer?
Oh, yeah,
and Michael goes,
right.
Why would I want you to not suffer?
I remember that one too.
I think the beautiful part of it was like, I don't know if the practice helped me, but like that like moment of laughing together and connecting around the hilarity of like, I mean, the whole thing was play, like in a sense, yeah. Right? Like it was all play. And I think that's what I appreciate about you. Like, you have these really beautiful sides to who you are, which is like somebody who can like drop in like a really deep, profound moment. And then the next moment, like, you know, make like a self-pleasuring joke or something like that. And maybe it's not a joke. I'm not sure, you know? So
you never know.
Never know. Never know.
Oh God.
Well, thank you. That's very sweet. And kind of, I mean, yeah. I mean, I think of, I think of Jesus. Even that was my, you know, my guru growing up. Jesus was my guy, my best friend, my God, and we always took his teachings pretty seriously, even though it said in there, like, my yoke is easy, my burden is light. Even though he said, if you want to understand me, you got to be like these kids. Who I imagine were playing, you know, like what you guys are all like, what does he mean? And some of what are their jokes. Some of what he's saying is joking or just play. Yeah. And it's playful. It's like he's telling stories and he's using kind of outrageous examples. And it's just inviting you to see life as it is and be what you are, as you are.
If you think about what a joke is, it's just making light of something and creating laughter and joy. And so in a way, it's like people talk about the cosmic joke. I feel like everything everything is a joke on that level, that it's all literally just for our own entertainment and pleasure and laughter and joy on some element of it. And so the more you start to understand that, the more you see everything in this joke, lighthearted way.
Yeah.
It's available to see it that way.
You know, we've had Michael, we've all had like conversations where you drop down into like, what does this mean or meaning? And then Michael, you'll be like, there is no meaning, right? Like everything is whatever, you know, whatever. We'll have these kind of conversations. And today though, as I was walking around thinking about this episode, I started to ponder the feeling in my body that all of life was play. And I'm walking down the sidewalk and the sun is shining and the birds are kind of doing their thing. And then people are walking by me and I'm like, I'm in this simulation that is Earth, that is the human experience. And I'm just like, this whole thing is about play. Mm. And the sensation in my body when I hold that truth is like one of pure delight. Like, regardless if that is the like, the meaning of life, in a sense, regardless if that's some like thing that is like a hard objective truth, doesn't matter to me. But what mattered to me in that moment was in holding that truth in my body just like feels lighter and it feels like a sense of vibration and vitality and beauty. And like I feel the sun on the back of my neck more and I feel the sidewalk more and like possibility opens up and curiosity opens up and my experience of life sort of like magnifies in such a beautiful way.
I think about, I play guitar, sort of my primary work. I love that my work is play and I love the language, like the for music, we say you play music, and which makes me like wonder, what is the difference? Because it's my work. But when we use words play, I mean, you're supposed to play sports, but some people do that for work. So what, like, what's the difference between work and play? And I think there's something about, I was having a conversation with some friends the other night about this. And it seems like there's something about play that is done for its own sake. And work, you're kind of trying, it's feels like you kind of have to, there's a should, or there's like a, you're doing it for money
means
or
to
for
an just end.
A means to an end. And when you're in the, in play, it really is for itself. There's like something about it's, you're not, when you're just like playing as a kid, it's, you're not playing to get to the end of the playtime. If you're really having fun and playing, you're playing for itself. But I notice, you know, like if I'm playing guitar and I'm just playing, that feels different than if I'm going to stop and practice and work on something. I can stop and that phrase is wrong. I got to get it right. And there's a little, but can we allow our work to become play? Can we allow our, and you know, even the words that we use in spiritual community and in spiritual language, a lot of times we talk about doing the work or spiritual practices. Like when I'm practicing guitar, that's more like work. But can we, how do they marry? I'm just interested in that dynamic of like, how do the play and the work come together in this moment where, and can it be, even when you're doing something that has a goal, can you still find a way to do it for itself at the same time?
Yeah. To me, I think about like making, even if it is for a goal, then it just, I'm visualizing making the play container even bigger, where even when you get to that goal, it's still happening within the like, okay, now what? It's like, even the goal is still just for the sake of play. So just like this whole life is not to get anywhere, is like when we die, it's going to be in the middle of things. There's not going to be this like, now it's the end and we've arrived. And so understanding that every goal that we reach is still happening within the playing. It's not like now we're getting to this thing. That's how I look at it.
You know, I was checking, I was looking up sort of what does play, what's sort of, how does play and trauma kind of interact, and like what does play do in the development of children as sort of preparing for this episode. And a lot of times in the first part of the episode, we like to kind of create a hypothesis, right? Like, is play the pinnacle thing, that kind of thing, and like develop some framework, and then we'll move into some personal stories and some social commentary. But the interesting thing, I Googled like play and trauma, and it said, how does play impact trauma? And it basically, the answer was traumatized children do engage in play activities, but bring into their play the stress they feel in all aspects of life. Play then often becomes totally focused on winning and losing, control, they become critical, they become obsessed with rules and an attempt to alter the process so they do not come out as losers.
Wow.
Which was like such an interesting like idea as we think of us now as just old children, like older children, mm-hmm. right? Whose play adaptation strategies maneuvered into like other types of things. But originally, like when kids play, the kind of development that happens inside of them, there's like physical development, there's cognitive development, there's social development, there's emotional development, there's like things that kids that only get developed through play. Like they learn how to cooperate, they learn how to socialize, they learn how to have empathy, they learn like resilience, they learn self-confidence, like they learn they learn agility and balance, they learn like language skills, literacy. Like play is the foundation for all of these incredible developments within children. And then like trauma comes on the scene, right? And the play maneuvers in the development of what it means in a human into these things like a capitalistic society and like getting to the top and like winning and like all of these kind of things. So such an like play is play like that, as well as it is like, I think the thing that you do as a kid, but it's like filtered through maybe a more pure vessel or like a more traumatized vessel, right? It comes out like a little whack. Like, and I also thought of my childhood, like I was obsessed with winning and losing. Like I could not, like I couldn't lose. And I'm like, oh geez, I have a long ways, like, actually maybe not a long ways to go, but like just to come back to sort of the original heart of what play looks like as a child, which maybe was the pinnacle, which was the invitation of Jesus that you sort of were talking about originally, you know?
The conversation I was having the other night with the friends, there were some people from my Patreon that we were all talking, and one of the people brought up how sometimes in spiritual communities and in like traumatic situations or just socially, it can get hard to maintain a spirit of play. If somebody comes in that is traumatized, or somebody comes in that is like sad, you know, like if two of us right now are playing and laughing and then one of us starts crying and sad, the other two probably go, oh wow, what's going on? Are you okay? And we kind of like lower to that vibration more. There's this kind of higher vibration, if you will, of laughter and play, that like anything that's happening is just part of the, and you can even in play, you can be pretend sad while you're, if you're putting on a play and you're acting, why? but if it somehow like actually lowers the emotional vibration of something, like, oh no, they're actually really crying. It almost feels inappropriate or something to play over the top of that. So that's just an interesting dynamic that how can we keep, like, in a world that is, that isn't just at play, in a world that that we've forgotten that we're at play, and people are really believing they're suffering, how do you not bulldoze over that and be just like laughing at them in their pain?
Yeah.
But also not get like fully trapped in their belief with them and kind of like hold it lightly. It's almost like a good actor. It's almost like you when you're acting well, I'm not a good actor, but like Emily, you're an actor. When you're acting well, from what I know, you're feeling things. It's not like you're not feeling them. Like you're feeling some degree of what's happening in the character and the story, but you're not lost in it. You're not lost.
Yeah, you're aware actually that it's a character. Yeah.
Right.
You're aware that you're putting it on.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's beautiful.
So the hypothesis is this: what, play is the pinnacle achievement of the most spiritual man?
I would almost say, like, what is it? What does it look like? Like, what changes when we place play as a centric value? Yeah, what does that create for us?
And, you know, play, like you said, can be like massively offensive, right? To somebody who is in a different
like maybe a stuck trauma point and stuff. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting, like a thing to dance with. Well, should we get into the first segment?
Yeah, let's get personal.
Let's get personal.
Let's get personal. 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 Let's get personal.
I'm just looking at the look on your face, Mike. You're like, that's the first time you've heard it. You're like, oh, wow, they've got music. Here we go.
That's great. I love it. I was enjoying watching your face as you were playing me that.
So this is a segment where we get personal around the content of the show. So the sacredness of play, the conversation around the centrality of play for a rich and spiritual life, where we just sort of share personal stories in this vein, which we've already been doing, but figure we would drop down a little deeper. Anyone that comes to mind?
I was thinking kind of as you were talking about childhood and play in our childhoods, it made me curious to hear from both of you, and I'll share as well what the narrative in your childhood was like around play. Because for me, I feel like I had a very unique childhood in the sense where play was really valued and celebrated in my house. And I was homeschooled until high school. And so my mom put a massive emphasis on like making sure we had a lot of time to play. And a lot of it was really imaginative and like creating whole worlds and stories and TV shows and like just constantly being creative. And I feel like there was a lot of time for that in my childhood, more than the typical experience. And it felt really, really celebrated. And I feel like that's a big reason why my life still kind of looks like a lot of play and always has as an adult. And some other people will like comment on like, how are you, like, what do you even do for work? Like, have you ever had a real job? Like, how do you pay your bills? Like, why you're always like somewhere doing some crazy thing. And it's just always been very natural to me to keep play first. And when I'm thinking about how to generate money or what to, like, I'm thinking of it in a creative project based way. And I don't feel like I really had to overcome some conditioning of like, I need to get a job and do like, cause it's just, I was really fortunate to grow up with that being a major part of my childhood. And I'm really grateful for that. So I'm curious what narratives did you guys have as children around play, and how does that show up for you now?
Go ahead, Michael.
I was the oldest, and I feel like I was kind of expected to be, at least I expected myself to be older than I was in a way. Like I was looking out for my younger siblings. I was babysitting at like, you know, very young age,
two and a half, three,
mowing lawns at six. I played music, music was always kind of my way to play the most. And but I think part of how serious my childhood and my spirituality was, aside from when I got to play music into it, is probably why I'm passionate about this subject right now. In a way, it's like, oh wow, this is much better. If, you know, the story of like, we got to save everybody from burning in a lake of fire forever by changing their beliefs just isn't that fun, you know?
That's a kinky game to play, but like, we're not going to play that one very long. You know what I'm saying? We could do like the lava pit where you got to like jump from the couch to like the chair, right? And then like, but like, if somebody actually is really going to die, like, that's when the game stops, right?
Totally.
Yeah, if you're actually jumping in lava and people and you're laughing, then you're the devil.
That's not fine line.
Right. So life was serious for you. Like it was a little more on the serious side.
Yeah, I was always kind of a weird guy playing around, but it wasn't necessarily connected with my spirituality or, you know.
Interesting. Yeah, I would say for myself, it's an interesting way to think about how play was characterized as a child that you sort of brought up, and where my parents were like, hey, get out of the house. Like, there was five kids and I'm a triplet and I'm the oldest. So like this sounds like the dogs are playing too. So
dogs just started playing as we talked about this. So if you hear some squeals, that's the dogs wrestling.
Which we weren't allowed to have dogs as in our household, because my dad was like allergic to pet hair, but there was plenty of kids. So I don't know that we needed dogs, right? We would go, like, my mom would be like, get out of the house, like, come back at six when dinner is, right? And so we would like get on our bikes, or we would like go in the woods, and we would like make forts, or we would go rollerblading, or we go play water sports, because I'm from Minnesota, during the summer we play volleyball. We played like so many sports, and I remember my parents going in high school, or in like middle school, high school, like, you can either get a job or you can play a sport. I was like, that's a no-brainer. Like, I'm not getting a job. They're like, you have to do something. And I was like, I'm going to go play a sport. And interesting, like, my play journey, like, I played sports through high school, and then I played through college, and then I played baseball professionally. And then it got to a point where, like, baseball wasn't like play for me. It was about winning and losing. It was about, like, massive moments and either striking out or hitting a home run. And interestingly enough is when music sort of was my outlet as well, just to, like, there was no pressure on it. It was just like, I would grab guitar and I would play and I would sing and I would write songs and I would create. And it was the thing that sort of brought me back home to myself after, like, my pretty intense competitive baseball experience would happen. And so I think I just had pretty like mixed signals, right? Like, one was like, go play, do whatever you want. And the other was like, be the best, right? In the midst of playing. So play has felt a bit like complicated for me. And I've also told my parents, like, I'm never going to get a real job, like, ever. And I still haven't really gotten a real job, like, 40 years later. So I think it was really encouraged as well, you know?
I noticed in those stories, like, in thinking about what play is, even, and what is it? Because it's not just like spinning around in the wind. It's not like play, even with a baby or with animals. When the dogs barked, I was like, they're like pretending that they're going to attack each other, kind of. And then like going to the edge of like, and then they're playing though. Like, what is that? There's this element with a baby, you're like, I'm gone, peek. And it kind of scares them a little. It's like, there's a little bit of like fucking with somebody. You're kind of like, you're going to the edge of fear or of the unexpected or of, but not fully moving over into panic. So I think even what we call play with sports, like, all sports are trying to win, but what is it when it does transition out of that? This isn't fun anymore. I really believe I need to win. And there's
that
something
line of too far. When it's like, oh, am I actually in danger? Or like, are we still playing? Is this still a game?
Right. Is the lava real on the floor? Is it carpet? And that belief, line. I think maybe that's kind of getting to what we're talking about.
Yeah, the belief feels like a big part of it for sure.
How to hold it lightly. If you don't actually believe that losing is going to make you a worse person or less valuable or less loved, or you know, it can suck to lose, but if you're playing and you lose, it's a different feeling.
That's, I think, the area where I've had the most struggle with seriousness, the plague of seriousness, is actually, like, it's been easy for me to do it in my external and my doing, but the internal narratives have definitely been, like, I think in my seeker phases, especially when I was really trying to figure out, like, what is the meaning of this? Like, what's that spiritual longing felt really serious for me and like led to some deep depression and a lot of worry and anxiety for a long time. And I think that's where it showed up for me. Even if on the surface I was like traveling Europe and like doing whatever, I'm like, yeah, I want to enjoy my life. Like that made sense. But there was this internal narrative that felt very serious. And it was all around belief, I think. And I remember a moment where that really shifted. There's been different moments where it's hit for me, but I'm going to tell a psychedelic story. Got to do it.
Oh, let's go. I've got a psychedelic story too.
Great. I'll open up that can of worms. You we can first, dive baby. In. Yeah, it was a really beautiful breakthrough around play for me. I was with a bunch of friends doing a journey together in a house in the desert. Michael, you weren't there for this one. Otherwise, you would have been playing with me for sure. no. And so, yeah, there was, it was like with a group and I was kind of by myself for a little while in another room and like going through my own individual journey for what felt like a lifetime as it tends to do. And when I came back into the main living room space where everyone else was, I was in this like just vibrant, dancey, like floaty space. And you could feel the tension of the collective space in there where everybody was in, there was like music playing that was really intense. And everybody was in this like, like serious, like the seriousness was palpable in the room. And I was like, oh, okay. And I actually had my dog with me who's playing in the ground right now. You might hear some of it in the background with my friend's dog who I'm dog sitting for. But she was kind of, I was like very aware of her and not having her like mess up the house or do anything. And there was this rug that she kept like picking at and I was super conscious of it. And I saw her picking the rug and I was like, stop, like trying to get her to relax. And she was just picking at this rug and the room was felt so serious. And I like was trying to get her to calm down because everybody's like meditating and in this very spiritual place. And the dog is like being noisy and picking at the rug. And I got this moment of self-awareness of like, I'm trying to control this animal. Like it became so funny to me. Like I'm trying to control this animal from just being an animal so we could do this very serious thing. And I was like, she feels, she has all this pent up energy because she just wants to play. And so I took her outside and just started chasing her around. And we were just like running in the yard and I'm like rolling around the floor with her. And I felt like this breath of fresh air of how much I needed to play. And then I started like weeping because I was like, oh, I've been doing this to my own self where I'm like, stop picking at the carpet, like sit still, be quiet. This is serious. Everybody's meditating. And like having that conversation with my own inner child. And I could feel her just crying, like, just let me play. Just let me run around and like look at the sun and get in the dirt and be crazy. And so I was out there for so long just playing with my dog on psychedelics, just having the best time. And then I came in just like beaming, laughing, and everybody's still in that serious thing. And I was like, y'all need to go outside and play and run around right now. We're all jumping in the pool naked. Come out here. And so I got everybody to come jump in the pool naked. And then the rest of the time was way better. So that was a big breakthrough for me around play.
I feel like we had the sound design too of like the dog in the background and like as I'm telling this story.
And right when I finished the story, they stop and they're chilling. But it was like, it was the sonic experience for you to really feel the dog energy as a key part of that story.
But isn't there like something about psychedelics that like, I mean, at least for me, that brings you guys back to like that really pure hearted, like playful, childlike sense? Michael, have you had similar experiences?
If I take psychedelics, I laugh and laugh and laugh and laugh.
Right.
Even if I'm crying. Like the last time I don't do psychedelics much anymore, but the last time I did one, there was one moment that was like I could feel some ways that I couldn't save my daughter Amelie from suffering. Like, and as a dad, it's one thing to like accept my own suffering or this, you know, Brady in the kitchen being like, why would I need you to change your suffering? But your daughter, my daughter, I found for me, it was, there was some, just really loving her and fully allowing her inside myself to suffer as much as she wants. Like, Mm. So I'm crying. But also, I forget what happened. Then I started laughing immediately. Like, it's just, they were both there present. Like, the absurdity of all of this, of form and bodies and death and pain, all of it being in a state where you can see the cosmic joke of literally everything. But the joke, to tell a good joke, you sometimes have to believe, like being a good actor, you can't just pretend that you're done. You have to no. So you got to feel it. And the feeling is the joke. So if you are fully feeling it, fully allowing it, there's often this inside or transcending, however you want to visualize it spatially, there is peace holding it. There is joy and play that's bigger than the temporary crying and suffering.
Yes. I mean, my psychedelic experience has been similar in the sense of when I've only had a couple, but when I drop in, I'm loud and I am just no clue around anybody else in the room. I'm just loud and laughing and zoned in on whatever I'm zoned in on, so much so that the guides of those experiences have been hey Brady, why don't you go on a walk, why don't you go by yourself somewhere, or why don't you go in the kitchen where nobody is. I remember the last time I went to the kitchen and I was coming down from Peking, so I could walk. I still wasn't safe to have my phone, but am I ever safe to have my phone? Anyway, I was basically walking to the kitchen and I saw food and I started to be I would like to eat something. That sounds amazing. And I see this strawberry and I pick up a strawberry and I'm and immediately I'm reminded of this moment where my brother was with my nephew Trip when he was six, and he was he was saying, okay Trip, I'm gonna name different fruits and vegetables and you gotta tell me if you like them. And so my brother goes, so Trip, do you like broccoli? And he's like, yeah, I like broccoli. And he's like, do you like corn? He's like, no. And then he's like, do you like strawberries? He's like, you know I love strawberries. You know I love strawberries. Like, this six-year-old kid's the cutest thing ever. So I pick this strawberry up coming down from mushrooms. And I take a bite and I'm like, you know I love strawberries. You know I love strawberries. And I just said that for 5 minutes and people were just dying. And I'm like, I was inhabiting my full six-year-old self. Like, it just feels like it awakens this whole thing. And I remember walking in the other day to this room where we were doing a Soul Games one day hang where there was breath work and I don't know, there was a workshop thing and then we were going to chill. And I walk into the room and it's right before the breath work starts and everybody's sitting lotus pose, being super quiet, uber spiritual. And I walk in and I'm the one that's leading this thing kind of. And I'm like, whoa, wait, is this when we're supposed to be super spiritual? And then everybody laughed and loosened up. But the spiritual life, I think what we've seen and modeled is like you said in the beginning, Michael, which is a bit disheartening, right? It's really serious. It's we have to be really cognizant and aware and you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. I'm it's not the life that I think I want to live.
Mm. Can I mention one thing though that I think some people try to do, especially in my evangelical charismatic circles, and probably a lot of in hippie circles, Venice, circles, there can be this. You start seeing how play is beautiful. You start valuing it, but then one temptation that can happen is to spiritually bypass to get there. So it's we're sad. Oh, don't up. Be sad. Just tell jokes and just laugh. We're happy. And it's fake. Or it's avoiding.
The love and light people.
The love and light people.
I brought them up in the last episode.
I had an experience at ISTA Emily, you know about ISTA. Mm-hmm.
Which is the Institute of the Sacred Temple Arts.
International School of Temple Arts.
There we go.
And it's this crazy retreat that involves like shamanic sexual healing. but anyway, I went there to, I wanted to heal, and I had two sort of goals when I went to intentions. And one of them was to heal from purity culture. Mm. Like I had still, I didn't believe in it in my mind, but I still could feel remnants of it, even in my reactions against it. Like the fact that it still held any weight for me. I was like, okay, there's still something about it that owns me. And we have these whole like release sessions that we're doing, emotional release, and we're weeping. People are banging on pillows. We're screaming into our hands. We're crying, snots everywhere. It's very emotional and intense. And I'm releasing about purity culture. And I'm just like, I'm feeling angry. Why did they take away my innocence from me in a way that like the pure innocence of pleasure and play around my sexuality? Mm. Why was it sullied? And what did they take from me? I was a victim, right? I was just, and then I went so deep into it, fully letting go in it, into that experience of grief and anger and all whatever came up, that suddenly a switch came where it was like, I saw my own kink in it. I saw what I got out of it. I'd seen before what they got out of it. I was like, it's just a kink for those people. They're just like, but I didn't see it as my kink.
What was your kink?
I mean, it's hot. Purity culture is hot. If you're like, don't look at these titties.
It's like the most extreme version of like teasing.
Yeah.
And delayed gratification.
Totally.
Sexy.
You naughty, naughty boy. I would never. I am too righteous for that. It's a very kinky game. But I saw my kink in it, and it was like, oh yeah, it made sex exciting. It made women's bodies more exciting. Everything was a little bit more. And so I just saw my own excitement kink in it. And the crying immediately again turned to laughter, but not from a bypass way. I went so deep into it that I found the game. And that's the kind of like, I don't think the true joy, the true rejoicing, the true play is found by bypassing our lower emotions, if you want to call them that. I think it's through them. I think you go just fully let them happen.
Wow.
Dive all the way into your, I'm a victim. Arjo, isn't it great to be a victim?
Yeah. Well, and I think, I love that you brought that up, because right before you brought up the bypassing thing, I was thinking something similar that was occurring to me as you guys were talking and hearing Brady's story of the strawberries and the absurdity. And I feel like I found the most effective way to bring the energy of play into a space in a way that's contagious is either just like by being in that frequency myself, or even making fun of myself, or rather than pointing to the other person and being like, you're stuck in a victim thing, or you needed to do this, like turning that on myself and being able to make light of things and just bring that own energy sometimes can help people catch it and be like, oh yeah, huh, that's like you said, Brady, when you walked into the event that you were leading, and like you can really shift the energy of a space with that when it's self-directed. And I think also, as crazy as it sounds, with other people it seems like jumping into the story, like Michael, you're saying, going down to the bottom of it, of really being like, yeah, that is so awful. Like, but not in, like, as I'm saying it now, it sounds kind of patronizing. I'm like, yeah, that really sucks. But no, like being the actor and genuinely like going there with them, it almost lets it kind of complete itself and satisfy itself. And I've experienced this in some of the most extreme situations of people being in like suicidal states of like deep, deep, like, this is why everything sucks, and expecting me to be like, well, no, this is why you should not see it that way. But just be like, yeah, that's so hard. Like, and just really sit in it with them. It almost does this crazy thing where the ego structure is like, it gets the the cookie out of it in a way where it's like, yeah, okay. And then it almost like gets bored of it and moves on. And so I found that to be a lot more helpful if you are in a place where you're aware of that in someone else. Jump in the game with them, like authentically, really, because rather than trying to pull them out of it, which kind of comes full circle back to Michael being like, why would I want you to not suffer, Brady? Like, because, you know, if that's what's happening, then there's some level of desire for it, and it'll resolve itself when it's ready to. And the payoff of that is great. Like, the payoff of purity culture is like getting to heal from purity culture and then discover sex after being repressed for forever. And that's awesome.
Oh my God.
From personal experience. Worth it.
I mean, it's like the, such a grand version of the dogs going up to each other and be like, huh? And then, and then the break, like you just do that for like 40 years though.
But it'll resolve in its time.
It resolves, like, and it's amazing.
Yeah. The longer you're stuck in the believing it, the more satisfying the release is. Like, I talk about how it's like everything is an orgasm to me at this point in life. Like, literally, I like everything is an orgasm in the sense that what life force seems like it's doing to me is like contractions and expansions over and over, like constricting energy and then releasing it. And the more you constrict it, for the longer you constrict it, the more satisfying the release is. It's like edging. And a lot of people are edging in all kinds of different ways.
And it's for like, those that don't know what edging is, could you like, could you describe what edging is for those that don't know
what
edging
is? You want me to describe it?
Yeah.
I feel like one of the men should describe it.
So I mean, you're the one that brought it.
You got any music that you can play?
People don't know what edging is for real. No, everyone knows what edging is. Okay, if you don't know, if you're still edging in purity culture to the point where you don't know what edging is,
you stimulate yourself to almost the point of ejaculation or orgasm, and then you pull back.
And you do this because the purpose of doing this is because once you do finally let yourself orgasm, it makes it way better when you've prolonged it. So I think people are doing that everywhere all the time and all kinds of different ways. And so the most loving thing we can do is to just indulge the game and be an example of what it looks like to be playful. And a lot of times people pick up on that and be like, why is this person not seem to be suffering in their shit, you know? And it kind of, it makes people curious about their own games, but you can't like shove that down anyone's throat. It's not helpful.
Yeah.
You know, I've heard a couple of things. Like, I first off love how you bring in sex to like most podcast episodes. Like,
I'm the sex representative for this podcast. Like, it's fine. I've accepted it. I'm going to talk about sex every time.
It's beautiful. But, you know, like, it's the thing where they say, hey, sex is the way that adults play. Like, this is...
I don't know if that was an ISTA thing more than it was just that takeaway from a specific person who went, and that was their realization, a mutual friend of,
Which
I don't think that's something they actually say there, though, but
Got you. But, like, it's a quote that I've heard, and...
does their name rhyme with bore? No, I'm just kidding, sorry.
But then there's the whole thing where, like, my friend Elena Dominguez says that the way a lot of the, like, the two primary ways that people heal trauma is actually through play and orgasm, like play and sex. And it does this interesting thing where it, like, frees you up. You know, I was thinking about, like, as you guys were talking, I was thinking about my nephew Larkin and my niece London, right? They play and then they fall down and they have, like, this thing that happens. And they get like really sad or like really mad. And then they just need a moment where they're withed in the midst of their like big emotions, where they're just like held and like feel safe. Like, I was thinking about what are the qualities that actually help me get back into a spirit of play, like actually feel the freedom of play. I think one is safety, and another would be like some sense of solidarity or witness in the midst of maybe whatever suffering moment that I have. And when I'm with somebody I feel safe enough with, and I feel like they're with me long enough, then, you know, there's just moments with my nephew and my niece where they just go like, okay, I'm good now. Like, I'm good.
I'm ready to play again, right? Like they were like, I miss my mommy. Yeah, I miss my mommy. And after like 2 minutes of like, okay, I know it's sad, right? It's sad. Like I miss,
yeah, I would miss my mommy too. It's the most effective way to get them to complete that cycle. Cause you wouldn't tell a kid like, no, go back to playing, like stop feeling this. But yet we do it to adults. And so I feel like treating adults like big kids has really helped me in my social skills and relational skills, is remembering that there is an inner child in everybody and interacting with people in that way where it's like, yeah, that's what I'm speaking to with the committing to the acting role and really indulging that and jumping into the story wholeheartedly is actually the quickest way to get someone to move through it.
Yeah.
Can I say one thing about the sex thing before we get too far from it?
Yeah.
Going back in, baby.
Back to it.
Back to edgy.
I'm not going
to
complain.
I think it's a nice ideal that play is the way that adults have sex, but I think most adults don't actually play much in their sex. It seems like for a lot of us, it becomes still a means to an end, either a means to some like an orgasm or like to be accepted by somebody or
to feel beautiful or loved or worthy.
Yeah. And so that sort of performative, it can become performative where it's almost like that win lose energy. Like, is this going to be good? Am I going to be good at this? Or is this, am I attractive enough or whatever your vibe is? It's just being present in the pleasure for its own sake seems like a fairly rare thing. It's why I love Tantra. That's what I love about Tantra. It's like it allows sex to not just be, you know, a performative competition for my ego, but a way of being present and a way of just enjoying the moment in a very full way.
If you were going to define Tantra for people who don't like, not familiar with that word, how would you define it?
Tantra is a whole thing. I mean, it's a lot of people, when I first thought of Tantra, I thought it was like a way to like some tricks, some Kama Sutra positions and like sex stuff, to like have crazy sex, but it's actually far deeper than it's sex is like a part of it for some people, but it's basically in Indian and like Hindu you know, the myth of it is basically Shiva and his bride Parvati, who shows up as the power of Shakti, are basically making love. So it's emptiness and form sort of coming together, and we each in Tantra, it's not just male and female. We all have both feminine and masculine energy in us. We both have Shiva and Shakti in us. But as two bodies come together, they're playing with those energies. And so you're maintaining awareness, but also allowing the form to play and to dance. So it's not just getting lost in one or the other, but it's allowing the Shiva and Shakti to come together. So it's a whole thing. But it's beautiful, I think. I wish Christianity had it. I wish there was a Christian Tantra. I feel like I want to invent it.
Wait, what does that mean? What do you mean you want to invent a Christian Tantra?
Think about the Eucharist. Like, what? It's not just bread and wine, right? There's a whole thing about it. It's like, there's whole theologies about it and whole denominations about it. And it's like, it's a sacrament. It's a means of grace where you remember Christ and you become one in that moment with the body of Christ.
Yeah.
That can be sex. Like if you had like a Eucharistic view of sex where it's like, it's not just about a squirt. It's not, you know what I mean? It's not just about a momentary. It's about.
I'm so dead. He went, oh. Not like a, oh. Wait, what is it like again?
Oh my god.
Hillary always used to school. I know. Hillary always used to, like, before religious events, she'd be like, all right, everybody, O face on three. We don't have to do our O face.
That's amazing. I'm dead. Well, yeah, don't really you think that the like the baptism of the Holy Spirit was kind of like in some sense like in that category where like you had this infilling of love and warmth.
But it wasn't around sex. I mean, it wasn't explicitly at least taught like in use sex as sacrament. Yeah. There was like a comparison to Christ in the church kind of abstractly, kind of like uncomfortably.
Right.
There's not images like tantric books of like, here, you sit here and let her sit over your lap, you know, like a full, when you're in the tantric moment. Like, think about in the Eucharistic, I was just hearing yesterday from my mom, because my dad's like a bishop, all these moves that they, like the way that they move their bodies exactly during the Eucharist thing. Like, it's not just break it. It's like every little thing they say and do is important. And yeah, so if you did that with sex, if you're like, this is a way for the divine to experience itself, if you had that theology, like this is a grace, this is a sacrament for the divine in you to recognize the divine in me, and for that union to be the union of the divine, that's powerful.
It makes sense to me that it's not there in Christianity, in the sense that Hinduism is rich with practice, and Tantra is like a subset of Hinduism that's still kind of its whole own philosophy and way of life in itself. That's beyond even just sex. Like, I'd say breath is probably the primary center of Tantra in itself. That's utilized the most as a common thread, but it's really like a way of being with life, and sex is a way within Tantra that you can practice the way of being that is Tantra, and all of that's still within Hinduism, because Hinduism is so rich with practice. Christianity is not rich with practice. It's rich with tradition and like certain, like, oh, we do this thing in this traditional way. But I think there's a difference between that and practice. And so I could see why it's missing there. But yeah, I think I would say even rather than using the word Tantra, I would say just sacred sexuality is something that feels missing for sure, and could really be enriching in a way of just like communing. Like, there's the acknowledgement within Christianity that sex is sacred, but it's just like, it's sacred, so only do it with who you marry and to have babies. But, and that's what makes it sacred, but not sacred in the sense it's like, this is kind of the perfect metaphor for life itself and creative life force energy, and to get in tune with what all of this is and kind of do this metaphor practice of it that can really reveal so much about the rest of your life. There's like rich, rich possibility within it, but it's very ignored. I can understand why, but I agree that it would be a useful addition.
Interesting, you guys. I didn't know that this was going to be as much of a sex episode.
You did say your first instinct was, is this going to be about play parties?
I mean, maybe it should be called the sacredness of sex, the centrality of play.
I feel like we covered a lot of other things.
We got sexy.
Okay, well, if we want to shift into the social section, I have some non-sex related, really hilarious play things for us for that. Ready for that.
Let's hit the social.
Let's get social. Let's get social. Let's get social.
Your face again, Michael. I can't.
What was I doing?
Amazing. You were like, when the high note went, you were like, Well, hey, this is the section of the podcast where we talk about social things, Instagrams, TikToks, cultural trends that are happening in the vein of the sacredness of play, or the non-sacredness of play, whatever the vein is. I will start it out, Em, as you're sort of looking at your thing. I back to kind of the original part of the conversation, there was something I saw recently on Simon Sinek's Instagram,
Sinek, he's great. Like, he wrote a book called The Infinite Game versus The Finite Game. And he basically took this idea from a guy named James Carse, who came up with this idea of there's finite games, there's infinite games. And the finite game is like chess, or it's like football, where you play with a goal of getting to the end of the game, and there's a winner, there's a loser, there's like rules, there's like end points, there's middle points, where the final winner is actually distinctly recognizable. But he's like, then there's infinite games in life. Mm-hmm. And he goes, infinite games are where the whole point of the game is where it's played for the purpose of continuing play rather than to win. Like, the point of an infinite game is to continue playing. And if you're going to do anything, the point of playing is to like enjoy what you're doing. And so he basically says, like, business and politics, I guess, that's what it says here, are like an infinite game. Business, definitely, I can see that, right? Like, life in general is an infinite game. Like, the point of the game is to stay in the game. And you kind of, and he basically said, infinite games are ones where you, like, the rules can change. New players can leave or start at any time. Like, the whole point of an infinite game is to keep the game going. And so you can keep sort of enjoying it. And his whole thing is like, hey, if businesses like build their kind of key structural value system around being an infinite game rather than being the finite one where there's a winner and a loser, then they'll go way further, and it'll be like way more fun and way more innovative and more inspiring and resilient organizations, and where like the employees will enjoy being a part of it. So mm-hmm. I think it's such a beautiful, beautiful way to like look at life in general and look at business as like the infinite game that we're in this thing to play rather than who's winning and who's losing. Cause I've been too obsessed with who's winning and who's losing most mm-hmm. of my life. But you guys got one that comes to mind?
Yeah, I'll just say on that, like that infinite game thing, a friend of mine, Darren King, actually, when I was in Nashville visiting you, Brady, he mm-hmm. brought that up to me for the first time and framed it kind of as like, I guess there's a book about it. And the thesis of the book is essentially, when you look at life as a finite game, that's where a lot of the suffering comes in, where people are trying mm-hmm. to like reach towards the end goal of like, okay, graduating high school and getting this mm-hmm. job, and trying to always create these markers of like the winning part. Like, we're trying to create the win in life.
Yeah.
And so it's a really helpful shift to see life as this infinite game that's not about creating a win. It's just about playing it. So yeah. I really love that. Okay, I can't wait to get y'all's reaction on this thing that I found. It's so absurd. It is immediate. As soon as I heard this topic, this is the first thing that came to my mind, which just shows I'm about to reveal how absurd my Instagram feeds are. But this came up. I don't remember who shared this. It came up on my Instagram. So I'm going to take you through the timeline. So this happened, the screenshot of an article that I'm going to share first. Man spends $15,000 on high-tech dog costume to fulfill his lifelong dream. This is a man who knows how to play.
Is he playing or is he...
So he like
for real.
Is he serious? Yeah.
No, he like as a hobby, I guess, he likes to role play, like pretending to be a dog. And so he hired this company to make this like super realistic, high tech, like dog suit that he could put on and pretend to be a dog. I'll show you another picture of it where you can see it a little bit better.
It looks like a dog for those who aren't watching.
This is a man in this costume.
That's crazy.
Wow.
And he just puts this on and plays. And so then it gets better. So this happened like sometime last year, right? And so then I guess some other guy saw this and like hits up the company.
Oh my God.
And he's like, I gotta one up this shit and do you one better. So then I just saw this article recently. This guy hires the same company, different man, spends $23,000 to fulfill his dream of becoming a wolf. So he has to make this realistic wolf outfit and just goes around, I don't know, God. Doing wolf shit, pretending
in
to be a wolf.
Parks, scaring kids and stuff.
That's amazing. That's so funny, because it's like, I love seeing stuff like this because it's just a reminder to me of like, there's some weird kinks in this bitch. And like, some people like some weird stuff. But I always love when people are just willing to embrace it and be like, you know what? I really love pretending to be a wolf so much that I'm going to spend $23,000 on a costume so I can really commit to it, because that's just really fun to me. Like, good for you. You get it. You know how to play. Thoughts?
That's amazing. Well, I was thinking about your thing the other day. What did you say, Em, around like if something's no longer your thing, you're not gonna shit on somebody else's thing.
Oh yeah, someone's yum.
Don't yuck someone's yum. Like if someone's yum, it's to very get much into more that costume.
Family friendly than your don't shit on people.
Exactly. Don't yuck on someone's yum. Which it's amazing, right? Like there's so many ways different people's yums is like really odd, but like let their yum be their yum. You know what I'm saying? Like I think it's amazing.
Yeah.
Like people probably get that probably had so many like people just like shitting on the article and like that dude and how they're so weird, but like that dude, if you put $23,000 towards something, you like it matters to you. Like yeah, you're going all
you're
in. I'm like, dude, good for you. Like that you went all in on something.
Yeah.
Well, like how is that gonna hurt the world?
Totally. And I love that, like, yeah, that video you're referencing, Brady, about the yucking the yums. Like that's one thing I found really delightful about kink, the kink culture specifically, is there's so much crazy shit happening in kink, and no, everyone's just kind of like, great, you like that? Amazing. You can find other people that like the wildest things, like the whole furry thing, the like diaper baby role play people. There's like so many kinks that there's massive communities. We're bringing it back to sex now. I'm sorry. But I'm not sorry.
As we should.
There's so much out there, and people find other people that are like, I also like to put on a diaper and pretend to be a baby while I have sex. And they find
you
each
do.
Other and have a great time.
I didn't know that.
No, not
I
me.
Didn't know oh.
No, I'm saying.
I love your reaction, though. That was a very welcoming. That was a very welcoming.
Oh, you like, do. Weren't even you surprised. Do. That just shows the amount of like personal shit I've revealed on here. Just nonchalantly.
You do you, boo.
No, I was pretending to be the person seeking another diaper person. But they find each other, and it's great.
No shame. No shame.
Yeah. No, I think it's wonderful to find. I mean, Michael has a good diaper story. I won't make him tell if he doesn't want to tell it.
Michael,
but it's a good segue.
Do you want
it's
to tell
it? It's a great play
is this,
story.
Is this the after party conversation?
You don't have to.
This is a wild story. Do I tell this story?
I think there's a version of it you can, a podcast
tap
version.
Tap in your share. Body. See what your body says.
If you don't want to, then we'll leave everyone intrigued of like, what is Michael's diaper story? And people just fill in the blanks in their mind. It'll be great.
And then we'll tell it at like some Soul
They'll
Games
They'll probably come up with
something.
Some way weirder things than what it actually was.
When we start the Soul Games commune, then we'll tell all the stories.
I'll tell you the story.
Here we go. We're going back to personal.
Back to personal. So
I love it.
Went to this New Year's party and walked in, and nobody was dancing. I just kind of, if you know, you guys know me, but if other people like, I just kind of, I'll roll with, there's not much that's going to like upset me or offend me or get me to be like, oh, I don't know. So I walk in, somebody starts dancing with me, and I just full on, yeah, dance party. Here we go. Just my hug. Hello to the first person in there was like a full just, we ended up like dancing and rolling around on the floor, like contact improv, just full on. And then everyone else is like, okay, I guess this is a dance party. And then everyone kind of like ends up on the floor, and the host was like, she wanted the like dance. This is going to sound sexual. It wasn't actually a sexual thing. It's going. You're not going to believe me, but it was. It was
just a play.
Everyone
thing.
Was sober.
These people know how to play.
But this is a very wild, playful group of people. And she's like, basically, what if we oiled up? And I've got these diapers. And what if we wear diapers and continue to dance?
Really?
Yeah. And I'm like, all right, let's go for it.
Wait, so like, did most people?
This wasn't a kink. It wasn't that many people. It was like me and these like six dudes, and then like this woman, and then a non-binary person. Just kind of, and everyone, almost everyone was significantly older than me.
So that's why they had diapers. That makes sense.
The diapers were like a practical thing of like, we could all be naked, but still protect our genitals.
Yeah. Safety. It wasn't a sex thing. Like, it also made it not really sexy.
Right.
It was funny. Yeah,
to just be like contact dancing with skin without genitals being involved. I can kind of understand the logic if I really go there.
I will say, we laughed so hard. We laughed just for so long and so hard, and I eventually just left, and they were still doing it. They just were still dancing in their diapers.
With your diaper and your oil on? Did you leave with it on?
Oh, no, I changed back into my clothes.
Do you have a picture you could like prove this?
I need it. No, I need a picture. This was not a let's stop and take photo. It's a very like, this is a moment that's happening. This is wild.
That's why I'm like, genuinely, it's a good story for this episode. Because it's like, amazing. That's some people that know how to play.
They know how to play. Like, yeah. Play.
And I love that they're all older than you. It's perfect. They're like these older people that are like, this New Year's, let's oil up and put diapers on and just dance. That'd be really fun. Like, I love that. That's amazing.
Like, that's an epic story that you'll have forever because a couple people knew how to play.
Yeah.
And they were down. Like, the rules changed.
Right.
Like, the people came in and came out. Like, they made it up as they go along. Like, that's beautiful.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And there's going to be so many people listening. It's like, that's so weird. That's not beautiful. But I'm like,
that's all my hesitation of sharing. It's not a story that translates well to others.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And maybe, unless you're.
But like, when you left that party, what were you feeling in your body? Like, I would imagine
I was
just
feeling
elated.
Great. I laughed. I mean, anytime you laugh for however, an hour and a half, 2 hours, just straight.
Yeah,
it's the best stuff. Lit up, it's amazing.
Like comes all the way back.
Again, everyone was sober. Nobody was drunk. Yeah. No drugs. Just a sober, being silly.
Wow, that's amazing.
It brings it back to me for me, like all the way to what you said at the beginning about like actual gurus get the play of it, get the joke of it. And I remember when I went to India and did this meditation training out there, that everybody showed up and thought it was going to be very serious and structured, and a lot of it was for most of it. And then on one of the days they came up and they're like, all right, we're gonna meet outside. And we met outside and we're like, okay, what are we gonna do? We're here as like devotees, and they have like frisbees and balls, and like for a solid 2 hours they just start giving us all these like kids playground like recess games to play. And at first everybody's kind of like, okay, what's the deeper meaning of this? But eventually, it's natural and you start to just play. And then at the end of it, he just goes, all right, notice how present you were through all of that. Like, you weren't thinking about anything else. You were just playing. You were just here. And so it doesn't have to be so serious, to be present. Yeah. It's just like play creates presence. So
we're just telling them all about all of our cults, Tim. All the cults.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Michael and I have dipped our toes in quite a few cults. Maybe started one together.
We all have, right? Like, that's probably where this is all going at the end of the day.
We may or may not be buying land to start our own. TBD. Stay tuned. Season 2.
About that video.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. Yeah, it's a lot of play.
Good. No,
it's a lot of play.
Well, I will say this. I heard one story in like piggybacking off what you just said. And like, I heard a story about the Dalai Lama where he was, there was this time where like all the different I guess he's the Dalai Lama and there's like llamas. Like there's, I guess they're like lower llamas or something. I don't know. Mm-hmm. And they're all like meeting the Dalai Lama for the first time. So like traveling in from all over the world. And I don't know.
I'm picturing like the animal llamas. I'm picturing all these llama animals gathering in a very sacred, holy way.
Daddy llamas. Yeah. All the llamas. And they're like coming into this room and like the Dalai Lama is sitting at the front of the room and all of these like, I think most of the llamas are men, but they're coming in, they're like bowing in reverence and they're like, this is a holy place. And like they get there and like, he's just sitting up there. And if you see the Dalai Lama, he's like full of joy. Like he's pure joy. And the story that I heard is like in the midst of like a really reverent moment, he just like lifts up his butt cheek and lets out a massive fart.
Yes.
Just like massive and just like
I love puts his that. Head back
and laughs. Like that's the secret.
That's so amazing. Good. I that's love amazing. That. That's so good.
So amazing. Like the chief pinnacle of spirituality is a Dalai Lama lifting up his butt cheek and farting in the midst of the absurdity of how so everyone's true. Trying to keep it safe, to keep it it's so sacred. So
true. I mean, I want to... The closest I've been, I was going to start a church this year. And I was going to call it Play.
Really?
The Church of Make Believe. I was imagining like you go in and you have to name yourself. And the more playful and insane, the better. So it could be like, you know, Princess Godzilla Empress Goddess of the Universe. And then
there's like a
costume. Yeah, sort of. And there's like a costume area where you can just you dress up too. You before you enter the space for worship, so that everyone's like you know priests.
Wow.
We lose how funny it is. You have like these people with these big robes and these like big hats. So it's kind of awesome if it's playful to me. So like anybody can be anybody. You could be dressed like the Pope and you're just in the congregation, and then we could do real spiritual practices and stuff. But if you're like, hi everybody, I'm Princess Godzilla, the goddess of the universe, we're gonna take the Eucharist now, and I'm wearing a blonde wig.
That's I love it. So it's perfect. So good. I'll go. I'm in. Sign me up.
Like, and you're not joking. Like, you're being for real. No. Like,
yeah, this is, I would love it. I was like, if you can make a thing where it's not inappropriate to laugh or cry at any time, you can fully be in the emotion of it and crying. We will try to go there, but we're also, I will be wearing a gorilla mask.
So good.
And I will be wearing a diaper with baby oil diaper. On.
I love it.
Oh, what are you going to be wearing, Em?
Wow. I feel like dressing as like a fruit, like maybe a banana or an avocado.
Oh yeah.
Oh.
But wow. I've never seen Em wear the same outfit twice.
You say this and I don't believe you. I think you're just ADD.
I
mean,
I have a bad memory maybe, but I'm like, how do you, I mean, I see her all the time. I'm like, how are you gonna have more clothes?
No, I don't. I think I wear like a sweatpants and a t-shirt every time I see you.
No.
All right, should we move into the last segment? Let's get deep.
Let's do it. Let's go.
Let's get deep.
Oh, that's nice.
That was nice, wasn't it? That was M.
Yeah, I know.
All right. Well, this is a moment in the show where we ask a deep question to each other, and we just keep pulling. We're not really strangers cards, kind of random cards, which are super fun. Today's question is: how does one earn your vulnerability? Have I earned it? Can I earn it more? How does one earn your vulnerability, Em? Have I earned it? Can I earn it more?
I think both of you have earned my vulnerability. I not to diminish that statement, but I feel like I give it away pretty freely. And with all my personal details I even share on this show. But I think to earn my vulnerability, I need to feel there's a space created of non-judgment and safety.
Mm. Yeah.
And enough presence between whoever I'm with, where, cause there's a felt shift that dropping from like, oh, we're laughing and we kind of have our ego masks on and we're like doing all the little social games. And to me, vulnerability is that shift where we're dropping all of that. And we're really being like, hi, I'm here right now. Are you here right now? This is what's alive for me. And so in order to earn that level of true vulnerability, which to me is like dropping all the pretend and the role playing and just being what's alive, I think I have to feel that the other person can meet me there.
Any way that we can earn it more?
Just be present with me and keep loving me when I, and accepting me when I am, so I can keep doing it more and deeper and deeper.
That's a beautiful answer. What if we asked you the question, Michael, as you're answering us both asking you, how does one earn your vulnerability and have we earned it and how can we earn it more? What would you say?
Yeah, you have, I don't have much to say other than what Em said. I mean, it's pretty much all the things I would say. A feeling of actual love. I mean, I think true love is unconditional. And so if I can sense that there is actually love here, makes me feel like my, there's that phrase again to bring Jesus back into it, but that sounds like an asshole thing on the surface of it, but that don't throw your pearls before swine. But I think there's a truth in that. It's like, why waste your vulnerability and these things that you know might not be heard and accepted on things that won't, beings that won't get it or that won't appreciate it. Like a pig doesn't care about a pearl. So if you don't care about the livingness of me, and I'm just some sort of like object to you in some way.
Yeah.
Then why give you what's alive in me if you're just even after that?
Yeah.
So I don't get that from you guys though. But I also agree. I'm a bit of a vulnerability slut. I just told him my diaper story. So.
Vulnerability slut. Well, you know, it is interesting. Like there is a okay, and I think there's a slight difference between self-disclosing and then information and then sort of self-disclosing. Like
I was realizing that mid-response because my first like thing was like, oh, I give it away freely. And then as I was talking about it, I was like, actually, no. How I actually define vulnerability is something different than just disclosing.
Whoa. And it's interesting because like, those are vulnerable shares, right? Talking about these kind of things are vulnerable. I think there comes a point where like, you know, you find yourself like there's 50% of stuff you will not talk about, right? And then you're like, oh, and then you find safe people and you try some crazy stuff and then you share all the things and they still love you and you're like, oh, now I'm like up to 90% of the stuff I'll share, right? And then it comes like, then there's like, there's still always like the 5% or like the 2% that feels really scary to share. And like somebody's really scary to share, it might be really easy for somebody else. But then there's like still that thing that like is really, the thing that feels really scary.
Well, I think that's the presence, because sharing something about, oh, I did this thing in the past. So you're just telling a story, which I think is slightly different than speaking vulnerably to what's right, happening in the moment. Right. There's a difference
in the moment.
Yeah.
I think that in the light of that, like the thing that I would need, and I do feel like we've dropped in some really beautiful moments, and I feel like deep trust and safety with you guys. Like there's like nothing that I could say that I've done or tried or wanted or experimented or whatever that you guys probably already haven't already done, right? So you'd be like, oh my God, amazing. I've done that. So like, I don't feel anything like that, but I do know.
Michael and I are pretty fringe.
Right. I do know that there is this space inside of me where what I do need to like keep opening in a vulnerable space is some like encouragement that of how you feel about me, like almost like in real time or consistently enough that I know like I can say anything and I'm going to be given love. And I don't even mean like, it's more like, it's actually not the things about like what I've done. It would be like, if I was like, hey, Michael, like that hurt my feelings or, you know, or hey, I feel this way or whatever. It's like, that's the scary thing, right? Like, is that thing going to be held? And that feels like a really old thing inside my body, like that I think relationships like y'all have slowly helped heal inside of me, because I have had moments where I'm like saying a really vulnerable thing and you guys have shown up in really beautiful ways in those moments, but like there still is this really scared part of me where I'm like disclosing how I'm being affected or how I'm feeling in the moment, and it's like a relational experience more than it's like a an out there, a third party kind of experience. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So,
Man, that brought up one other feeling for me. Like, I think it's actually for me about self acceptance and self love. Like, how accepting am I of what I'm being vulnerable about? Because if I'm honest about it, I don't like, I'd be the first one to judge it, not you guys. You know, like I would judge it harder. My ego would judge it harder than you. So but we project ourselves onto each other. And so we're like, if they're not going to love me, they're not going to think I'm whatever I want them to think of me. But you don't, if you already have that 100% love of what you are in this moment, you don't care what they think of you. Why? Yeah. It doesn't matter. So that's an uncomfortable thing.
And then you can play.
Then you can play. Well, hey, that was beautiful. Hey, let's jump into the wrap up. And in this episode of the sacredness of play / sex, because I think we have to change the title. No, I'm not sure. Final thoughts, final conclusions, final ideas. Anything.
To me, what kind of stuck out off of that original thesis is like the distinction of seeing life as this infinite game, that the point is not to win or to get to an ending point, and that there is no objective rules or supposed to. And when you're not living in a way where things are a means to an end and you're just really deeply present to the enjoyment of what you're in while you're in it, then play becomes available. And that the way to support others in arriving at that is to actually being willing to jump into even the suffering games with people if it helps support them in breaking out of it, and just being the living example of lightheartedness and being like the Dalai Lama farting in the holy spaces. Sometimes a holy space needs a fart, and if you're willing to be that, then you're a true guru. So that's my takeaway.
You got any takeaways, Michael? I think that was beautiful.
Yeah, it was beautiful. I mean, the holy fart is amazing. It's like just kind of the perfect bow, or the. But yeah, I want. I don't know. I think just having, I think play should be added to the fruits of the spirit. First of all, the list. If I could just like put that suggestion note in the box for Christianity, like the love, the and maybe like first or second, maybe first, even before love. I don't know. Maybe after love. I don't know. We'll talk about that another time. But the fruits of the Spirit are love, play. I think joy is in there. That's good.
Yeah.
But it's a good reminder to, like, if I'm in a moment that I can't find the play, like, it's there. I can trust that it's there. It's life. It's somewhere deep, 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 deep. So if I'm not present to it, I can go deeper into the feeling that I'm experiencing, accept it more, allow more of it to come up until I can find that underneath that is the play. That doesn't negate it, doesn't bypass it, but that is the ocean in which all of us little fishies are swimming around in.
And then at the end of the day, it all becomes play, right? Like even that experience, right? Being with the uncomfortable, being with the thing that what were you saying, Em? Like in the midst of sex, like edging, holding the contrast, creating more desire. I think you know, I think that I will leave this conversation with the quote that is probably like maybe a top quote in my life.
Quote master. I call Brady the quote master.
I was trying to get really serious. I was trying to like deliver this really seriously. I was like, this is one of my most important quotes that I've ever heard. And it's like, it's dance like no one's watching, love like you've never been hurt, sing like no one's listening, and live like it's heaven on earth. Like I try to live my life by that quote, like dance like no one's watching, because sorry guys, I can't help myself right now. This is so dumb.
Fart like everybody's listening.
I fart like no one's listening.
That's the point of the episode right there. Fart like no one's listening.
Fart like no one's listening.
So good. Oh my god, that's the episode title. Subtitle, like, play fart like no one's listening.
Yeah, it's really good.
Literally, if you can get to a point in your life where you can fart and like no one's listening, you've literally reached enlightenment. Like that might be the new echelon.
Oh, God. All my grandparents reached enlightenment.
Oh God, it's the truth though.
Life does bring you there in old age. Yeah, so it makes sense. It's a perfect metric. That's a great place to end this. Fart like no one's listening. Heard it here first.
Michael, thank you for bringing us the magic that you are. So enjoy your friendship and your the character that is Michael Gunger in the world. It's a beautiful, it's a beautiful piece of ray of light. So thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. So fun.
All right. Signing out. Appreciate you guys. Later, Em.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Hey, thanks for listening.
Yeah, thank you for spending some time with us.
If you want to find out more about what's happening with Soul Games, find us on Instagram at The Soul Games or go to thesoulgames.com.
We'd love your help in rating and reviewing the podcast. And don't forget to subscribe to stay tuned to all future episodes.
Hey, and if you're loving these episodes and they make your life a little more beautiful, please consider signing up for the paid subscription of Soul Games, the podcast, or even donating through listener support.
Yeah, we'd love your support. All monthly subscribers will get access to bonus content, previous episodes, and be the first to know about exclusive upcoming opportunities to join in on the Soul Games community.
Yeah, we're really excited about the Soul Games community, where you'll have a chance to connect with myself, Emily, and others who are on a similar journey of exploring new ways to enjoy the game of life with a touch more soul.
Well, we appreciate you all so much, and as always, it's a pleasure to be with you.
We are your hosts, Brady Toops.
And Emily Capshaw.
Thanks for listening.
Yeah, thanks. Love you. Bye.
Soul Games, the podcast, is a production of Soul Games Media.